Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of March 8th, 2018. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Good, good, good. I'm glad to see your lights are on. We're also happy to be joined by our other Climate Hawk colleague, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm well.
Good, good, good. So, let me just say in passing that I had a wonderful time at the MCAN conference last Saturday, right? Did you enjoy it, Mariah?
Oh, yeah, it was great fun. A lot of interesting people to talk to
and a lot of interesting talks. A lot of good discussion. If you missed it, well, we'll see you next year. But it was a good session, a lot of good speakers, and well worth the time. I hope that anybody listening went there, enjoyed it as well. So, one of the things that happened just before the conference last weekend, in fact Thursday, Friday of last week, was another big snowstorm in Boston. Now, New England is famed for its winter weather. Nor'easters are told stories, legends have told of big nor'easter storms. But this past Friday and going into Saturday was another storm where the sea, basically in Boston Harbor, downtown Boston, all on the coast of New England, there were serious flooding events that were beyond normal, right? I mean, did either of you see anything about that? I mean, I saw there was flooding in downtown Boston, right?
Mm-hmm. It was just flooding in places like Scituate, just the sort of unprecedented flooding that you don't see in March that is totally abnormal. I mean, gives just looking at those images, it gives new meaning to the phrase "the shape of water," doesn't it?
Oh gosh.
Well, I think that
I heard there were icy rivers floating, just rushing by in the streets, described it like a big bathtub of water right in their streets.
Well, I mean, for me, having been around New England for long enough, flooding. So I think the epicenter, certainly most of the pictures that you see, is flooding right down near the aquarium, right? And if you're in Boston, the aquarium is it's kind of near Faneuil Hall. It's the sort of doorfront to the water. The Blue Line T-stop, the aquarium T-stop is right there. And that place had several feet of water in it, which is not something that I ever remember happening before this winter. And so twice now we have had what are nearly, if not exactly, but certainly close to storms that are termed 100-year storms. That is to say that a storm of such intensity that is likely to happen only once in 100 years. And of course, we now have had two of them in this year that suggest that the intensity of the storm is driven by something outside the normal statistical variation of weather, that we have these terrible storms. In fact, the tide in Boston Harbor was higher than that associated with the blizzard of 1978, which you guys weren't even born yet. But I mean, the blizzard of 1978 was very high, quite high. And of course, both these storms have exceeded that in a single year. And this storm that came on past weekend was very long duration. It lasted through three different tide cycles, which happened to be rather high tide cycles. So everything, the perfect storm, which we've already had, but I mean, we have this perfect, convergence of things. It's I don't know, what can you say? It's a wake-up call, right? There are various articles in various newspapers saying that this is the new normal, right?
Commonwealth published an article, and they said that it's no longer an aberration, and it's, these storms are due to climate change and they're no longer an aberration. And both the governor and the mayor have made that clear. So kudos to the governor and the mayor for being stark about this, that this is climate change and we need to start doing things about it.
Well, the photo that I saw is a classic, again, just outside the aquarium, with a little panel looking out over the harbor talking about Boston Harbor and climate change, and a bench there that you could sit and look at the beautiful Boston Harbor. And of course, the whole thing was knee deep in water, which is sort of an ironic image. But I guess so the rather than complain about the weather, right, which is I guess Mark Twain one time said that everyone wants to talk about the weather, but nobody wants to do anything about it. I think that unfortunately in the modern age, we have finally done something about the weather. We've made the weather much worse. But these storms are harbingers of, well, not harbingers, they are climate change happening in real time. And I guess the question comes as to how Massachusetts as a state is reacting to this reality. Let me throw the ball to either one of you guys that may want to comment. Do you think that most people in the state have grasped the idea that this is unusual? Or do you think everyone continues to chalk it up to, a bad storm? And do you think that, Mariah, you said the governor's getting the idea, but how do you think that the city of Boston is coming to terms with this new reality? Right?
I mean, of course there's the whole, if you've got a frog in a pot and you just keep making the temperature higher and higher, pretty soon the frog is cooked before even realizing it was getting hotter, right? So I wonder, just in terms of the general population, I don't know if this is something where people are sort of starting to think this is unusual, or if it's just like, well, I guess we had a lot of storms last year too, and well, it's just kind of the weather. But yeah, certainly a lot of the planning, I don't know the specific names of most of the things that are being done in the city of Boston and around the area, but I know that Marty Walsh has at least created, or that the Climate Ready Boston was created to kind of help prepare for days kind of like what we've had. And then there's several initiatives that are planning for resilience and thinking of ways that we can, plant. I saw this wonderful sort of schematic of redesigning the whole, I think it was the Charleston waterfront, with all of these big spongy porous surfaces that will help absorb, water, and moving everything away from the coast and up higher. And, so these maps do exist, and they are, these sort of thoughts are out there. So they're working on it. I mean, obviously they have to, right? I mean,
and I guess the question is
like this.
Whether or not they're working fast enough and with enough seriousness of purpose. The question I have is whether or not the policies that the state is undertaking are commensurate with the reality that we're now facing. So I don't know. So I mean, I think
goes back a lot. A lot of times you have talked about reacting to what we have now, right? Which is what the city's definitely doing, versus trying to ameliorate it. What can we do in the back to sort of stop climate change? And I feel like sometimes that the city talks a lot about doing things to stop climate change. This Charlie Baker talks a lot about things that he's going to do to stop climate change, but isn't necessarily putting the kind of efforts that they need to. Instead, we're putting all of our efforts into reacting to the climate change effects.
Right. We can always spend the money after the fact to fix things up and help people, but we don't want to spend the money in advance to try and protect people from these ills. Well, I think for my money, I think one of the things that is important to keep in mind in the context of these storms, which just let me just say again, from the weather perspective, these two very severe, unusually severe storms bracketed several days of 70 degree weather in the middle of February, right? So the weather is quite strange. I think that what's incumbent on the state is to have a consistent long-term policy to try to address the issue of climate change through improvements in the energy infrastructure in the state. And to that end, I wanted to mention at least a bill in the Massachusetts Senate that our listeners ought to know about if they don't already. DR, you may have heard of this, so chime in, but let me just say the following thing. There is a bill in front of the Massachusetts Senate that's been introduced by a senator named Mark Pacheco, and I think he's from Taunton. And of course, that comes out of the Global Warming Special Committee on Global Warming. But it is essentially an omnibus bill that has almost everything that a climate hawk would want in it. And this bill has now been voted out of the committee. So now it is headed for some kind of debate on the Senate floor. When that debate happens, of course, depends on all kinds of machinations that we're not familiar with, but it's headed for debate on the floor. Some kind of parallel bill has to make its way through the Massachusetts House of Representatives, which is a place that will need the assistance of climate hawks to push it through the House of Representatives. But if those two bills can be brought together, then they'll be reconciled, and this bill would be quite good. And I just wanted to kind of list up some of the stuff that is in this bill. And if you've listened to this podcast before, these are things that are like a hit list of everything a climate hawk could want. So it turns out that as it's currently written, the bill would prevent, so I'm going to quote from the Mass Live article of a couple of weeks ago, because the bill itself is, you know, 120 pages legal language. But it turns out that the bill would prevent the construction of any new natural gas pipelines, and it would prohibit any kind of a tax on ratepayers to pay for that pipeline. So that goes directly to the issue that we've talked about before of the undesirability of pipelines construction because of the infrastructure implication and the desire of the utilities to put a fee on the ratepayer bills to pay for the pipeline. And as frosting on that cake, this bill would require that gas companies repair existing infrastructure. So all the times we've talked about gas leaks in downtown Boston and around the state, this bill would call for the utilities to fix those leaks, which is a good thing. The bill would require some kind, it doesn't specify, but it requires the state to set up some kind of a market base, that is to say price on carbon, before the year 2022, which is really pretty impressive. The bill would lift the cap on reimbursements for people who generate solar. So if you have solar panels on your roof, again, this is something we've talked about in the show, the Baker administration has tried to impose tariffs on solar panels, limit the use of solar panels because the utilities don't like them. This bill would basically lift that cap and let people put solar panels on their roof. And in particular, it's an important point, this bill would make it easier for low-income communities to have solar panels by allowing kind of an aggregate use where people could put solar panel in a field and all buy into this solar panel and share the benefits of having that solar panel in the neighborhood. The bill would increase the wind energy. It would require the state to buy more wind energy. Okay, that's going to push the offshore wind turbine industry. That's a really good thing. And it requires the state's pension board to divest from fossil fuel companies. I mean, what's not to like about that? I mean, it goes on to several other things. It expands the use of electric vehicles. It sets a target to have all renewable energy by the year 2050. This is a great bill if it can be passed, right? Mm-hmm. So the question is, I mean, how, what can a person do to address this, right? What can you do? Well, you want to call up your state senator and tell them that you are in favor of this Pacheco bill. I believe it's Senate Bill 2302. It's a clean energy bill. I mean, you'll get the message across to your state senator and particularly your state representative. What we'll do is we put up a link in each of the blogs to a link that will let you find out who your state representative and state senator is. You can call them up and give them an earful and tell them that you want this bill to be passed in its entirety. I mean, it's a good bill. I think that, and I think what it would do is maybe it would touch on something. This kind of a bill would align the policies of the state so we have one single policy about how we're going to address climate change. Anyway, so there's a long-winded thing. I mean, DR, tell me, have you seen anything about that bill? Do you think it's a way to go forward? What's your take on it?
It's definitely a way to go forward, and the renewed urgency of state-level efforts to address this problem. You know, it gained new urgency in light of what the, frankly, the embarrassment that occurred a few days ago in Washington State, where the Washington State legislature just somehow just couldn't muster the political will, couldn't find the courage, couldn't find the intestinal fortitude to finally put a price on carbon. Mm-hmm. So now, with the prospect of some form of carbon pricing in this legislation, you know, Massachusetts, which was the pioneer in terms of, you know, healthcare, which is the pioneer in terms of marriage equality, It ought to be the pioneer in clean energy. So there's just simply no rational basis for this bill not to become law. Right. So people really do need to lean on their legislators to get going on this thing now, because let's face it, you don't want to wait until there's another 100-year storm.
Next week.
That could be next month. Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Exactly. That could be tonight.
That could be this weekend.
And I would remind people that calling your state representative or state senator is not very scary. It is not, because they want to hear from you. No one is going to yell at you or bark at you or tell you that you don't know enough about the bill to have an opinion. All you have to do is call them up, ask, say, typically you're going to end up with someone who's answering the phone, an intern. You say, I'd like to leave my opinion about the clean energy bill. You say, I support it. Please ask the senator or the representative to support that bill. And they'll say, oh, thank you for calling. And you hang up and you're done. I mean, you registered that. They don't really, in fact, I think most of these senators are not particularly interested in your detailed opinion about various aspects of the bill, unless you have one. I mean, but they want to know if you're in favor of it, then they're going to be in favor of it too. So it's a simple thing to do, to call your representative. And once you've done it, it becomes easier and easier to do, to let them know how they ought to approach this issue. So, mm-hmm. I don't know. There you go. I have talked a lot on this show because I guess I'm feeling pretty strongly about this bill. I will put up the link to the bill itself. We will try and follow it going forward. This bill will probably bounce around for another year, right? And will probably undergo 1,000 tiny little cuts as everyone tries to take out the thing that they don't like, right? And the Massachusetts legislature, just like the people in D.C., don't want to act until the end of the session. So what happens is you put a bill in, everyone looks at it, it's going to go through all the summer of 2017, it'll probably be into 2018, might be into the end of the summer of 2019 before they finally get around to doing something about it, because that's just how it goes on Beacon Hill. But in the meantime, we want to build support for that bill and have everyone get in there and say a good thing about it. All right, I'll stop there. Stop me before I talk more, you guys. I'll put up links to what we want, a lot of this stuff, on the blog. It'll be at massclimateaction.org/blog. Of course, you can find the link to this podcast on our Facebook page at /massclimateaction. You can listen to us on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, and, of course, the Apple Podcast application. So we'll close to where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thanks for being here, Mariah.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here, DR. Thanks guys for listening to my rant. Thanks to everyone out there in podcast land for listening. We'll talk to you again real soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Very cool.